the World Trade Center. You're tuned to KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF with Fresno. Please stick with us. We need each other now more than ever. Coming up next, a special two-hour Democracy Now! Take care.
Nasci lá na Bahia de Mucama, confeitor. Meu pai dormia em cama, minha mãe em guisador. Meu pai só dizia assim, nega. Minha mãe dizia assim, sem falar.
Mulher que fala muito
perde logo o seu amor. Deus fez primeiro o homem, a mulher nasceu depois. E é por isso que a mulher trabalha sempre feito os dois. Olha, acaba de chegar, tá com fome. Mulher tem que olhar pelo homem. Que é deitado em pé, mulher tem é que trabalhar.
Friends of Media Alliance, we're celebrating our 25-year anniversary and we want you to celebrate with us. With MC Nicole Sawaya, performances by Teatro Campesino and the Brown Fellinis, and our featured speaker Juan Gonzalez of the Pacifica Campaign and New York Daily News, not to mention delicious food and drink. That's Saturday, September 22nd from 5 to 10 p.m. at the Soma Arts Gallery, 934 Brannan Street in San Francisco. Tickets are $25 and up and can be ordered by calling 415-546-6334, extension 370, or through our website, www.media-alliance.org. Don't miss our media bash.
Go 103, a otro lado, and you're listening to Maná. Zero, this is Democracy Now! In Exile, the War and Peace Report.
I purposely want to stand next to Muslims and Christians and Jews and members of all other faiths for one simple reason, because terrorism does not want us to stand together. The most effective response here is that we of different faiths stand together.
We do not want to become the evil that we condemn, and I think that's a really beautiful way to put it.
People flee Afghanistan fearing a U.S. attack. We go to Lebanon to speak with Robert Fisk, who interviewed Osama bin Laden. And we'll hear from peace activists who march throughout the country. Stay with us. Welcome to Democracy Now! In Exile, Resistance Radio, Breaking the Sound Barrier. I'm Amy Goodman. Pakistan sent a group of high-ranking military officers to Afghanistan today to demand the Taliban government hand over the accused Osama bin Laden and his top associates to the United States or face almost certain U.S. military action. The group is led by one of the top officers in Pakistan's military intelligence wing, which is thought to have unique intelligence on bin Laden's operations in Afghanistan and his whereabouts. But Pakistani officials caution that the chance of the Taliban bowing to the American demand is slim. The Taliban leader, Mullah Muhammad Omar, has already said in a defiant, warlike radio speech on Friday, he believed handing over bin Laden would not spare Afghanistan from a U.S. attack. The Pakistani president, General Pervez Musharraf, agreed to relay the ultimatum after days of intensive discussions with U.S. officials. General Musharraf reportedly assured President Bush in a telephone call on Saturday that Pakistan would allow the use of its airspace and airfields if needed, as well as full access to Pakistani intelligence on bin Laden. According to the Pakistani officials, U.S. officials had told General Musharraf's government that Washington would use every lever short of war to punish Pakistan unless it cooperated. General Musharraf was said to have made a number of demands in return for Pakistan's cooperation, including an end to economic sanctions imposed by Washington after Pakistan tested nuclear weapons in 1998, the lifting of an American ban on weapon sales, a pledge that Washington would assist Pakistan's battered economy by encouraging generous treatment by the International Monetary Fund and World Bank, and a shift in Pakistan's favor in its dispute with India over the Kashmir region. Meanwhile, Pakistani civilians gathered to protest their government's collaboration with the United States. This news from Afghanistan, tens of thousands of Afghans are streaming out of major cities and headed toward the borders with Pakistan and Iran. Amid fears, the United States is preparing to unleash a war on the land that has harbored Osama bin Laden. Iran has sealed its border with Afghanistan. Taliban officials of Afghanistan's ruling Taliban movement have also started to flee the capital, Kabul. Yesterday, the Taliban ordered all foreigners out, saying their safety could no longer be guaranteed. These who couldn't leave were bracing for war, stocking up on food as prices soared and the Afghani currency slid. Meanwhile, Mullah Muhammad Omar, the Taliban supreme leader, summoned religious scholars to the capital to discuss waging a jihad, a holy war against the U.S. Nearly 1,000 elders and Islamic scholars from across Afghanistan are expected to attend a meeting tomorrow. More than 3,000 U.S. Marines and sailors rehearsed helicopter and ship-to-shore landings off East Timor Sunday amid expectations of a revenge strike over the terror attacks on New York and Washington. The task force from the 15th Marine Expeditionary Unit and Amphibious Squadron 1 had been due to disembark troops for humanitarian work in Dili, the capital of and Swai and Wakusi enclave in Indonesian West Timor. Instead, three amphibious ships led by the 40,000-ton USS Peleliu stayed off the north coast of the capital, practicing naval and air maneuvers with Harrier jets, helicopters, and landing craft. Before two passenger jets slammed into the Twin Towers of New York's World Trade Center and a third into the Pentagon in Washington, the warships were on a routine six-month deployment to the Western Pacific and Arabian Gulf. U.S. Army spokesperson Major Paul Van Bremen told Reuters in Dili the task force is due to sail for the Wakusi enclave today to deliver humanitarian supplies before heading to Singapore. He said, after that, I'm not really sure they'll go, but they're part of a much bigger force. And Bush administration officials said yesterday they're considering lifting a 25-year-old ban on U.S. involvement in foreign assassinations and loosening restrictions on FBI surveillance. They said the Justice Department plans to send a wide-ranging set of proposals to Capitol Hill this week that would include more power to conduct wiretaps, detain foreigners, and track money laundering cases. Vice President Cheney said yesterday that CIA field officers may be allowed to recruit and pay overseas agents linked to terrorist groups and human rights abuses, saying it was necessary to infiltrate suspected terrorist cells. In addition, Florida Democratic Senator Bob Graham, chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, says he'll introduce a counterterrorism package next week that would create a counterterrorism czar inside the White House and establish authority for the CIA to recruit unsavory agents. And Secretary of State Colin Powell says the administration is reviewing an executive order issued by President Gerald Ford in 1976 that bans U.S. personnel from engaging in or conspiring to engage in assassinations. Some intelligence and terrorism experts have advocated assassinating Osama bin Laden, the exiled Saudi millionaire who lives in hiding in Afghanistan and has been named by the United States as the prime suspect in last week's attacks. The Senate last week approved legislation that would make it easier for the FBI to get warrants for electronic surveillance of computer transmissions. Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Patrick Leahy, the Vermont Democrat, called the measure overly broad and an encroachment on civil liberties. He said, "We have to be careful in our horror and revulsion over this horrendous and terrible act, that we don't start giving away the freedoms that make us different from terrorists." Several Democrats said many senators did not know exactly what they were voting on and supported the measure in their determination to condemn terrorism. Time will tell. Bob Marley and the Wailers here on Democracy Now! In Exile Resistance Radio. I'm Amy Goodman. Officials from Afghanistan's ruling Taliban movement have started to flee the capital, Kabul, amid growing expectations of U.S. attacks. Fear of reprisal has triggered a rush to get families out of the cities. Thousands of people have flooded over the eastern border to the already overflowing refugee camps of Pakistan. Those who couldn't leave are bracing for war, stocking up on food as prices soar and the Afghan currency slides. With Iran announcing it is sealing its eastern border with Afghanistan, opposition fighters controlling a narrow northern corridor, and Pakistan pledging to support U.S. anti-terrorism efforts, Kabul residents are feeling increasingly vulnerable. Afghanistan is already one of the poorest countries after more than 20 years of invasion, occupation, and civil war. A team of senior Pakistan officials is to fly to Kandahar today to press the ruling Taliban to hand over Osama bin Laden and help prevent a potential catastrophe in the region. The Taliban, however, continue to insist neither they nor bin Laden had the capacity to organize an international plot that saw trained pilots hijack large passenger jets in Boston and Washington. The spiritual leader of Afghanistan's ruling Taliban movement, Mullah Muhammad Omar, yesterday called an urgent council of senior Islamic clerics to discuss the situation. Mullah Omar on Saturday issued a call for jihad against the United States and neighboring states such as traditional supporter Pakistan if they attacked or assisted an attack on Afghanistan. We're joined right now by Thomas Gutierre. He serves as the Dean of International Studies and Programs at the University of Nebraska, Omaha, and the University of Nebraska Medical Center, and is the Director of the Center for Afghanistan Studies at UNO. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Good morning.
It's good to have you with us. Well, can you tell us the latest you're hearing now from Afghanistan?
Well, I'm not hearing much. Afghanistan doesn't have much electricity and it has no trunk lines, but what I'm hearing, of course, is that we have a situation where the Pakistanis are meeting with the Taliban to try and convince them to turn over Osama bin Laden, as you indicated. And I think there's an important element to this whole matter. Well, the Taliban and Osama bin Laden were brought together, in fact, by the Pakistanis in the late spring and summer of 1996. The Pakistani military has had a strategic objective in Afghanistan and Central Asia largely because of its concern about its eastern borders. So Afghanistan, being to the west, has been the central piece in something that the Pakistanis call strategic Islamic depth. And in Afghanistan, after the Soviet War, due to reasons that are too long to go into here, but there was a vacuum that was created by the inability of any of the resistance parties to come to put together an effective government. And eventually the Pakistanis, who had been backing some of them, realized that they were not going to be successful and backed the Taliban, another group that rose up in Afghanistan during this period. And it was a group that that was very dependent upon Pakistan's military, particularly its intelligence, military strategy, and also recruits from Pakistan's extremist religion madrasa schools. And thousands literally came to Afghanistan to fight on behalf of the Taliban against the other particular warlords within Afghanistan. When I was there in 96-97 working with the United Nations Special Mission to Afghanistan, I saw convoys of these people, none of whom could speak Persian or Pashto, the two major languages of Afghanistan, because they were indeed not Afghans. Into this mix, the Pakistanis brokered the return of Osama bin Laden, who had been fighting on behalf of the Afghans against the Soviets and left, went back to to Saudi Arabia, was thrown out of there for demonstrating against American presence there and against the lacking of Islamic character of the Saudi regime, went to Sudan to establish training camps to fight against the West now, and then was thrown out of there due to Saudi and American pressure, and went back to Afghanistan as a result of the efforts of the Pakistani Army's military intelligence to put them together, the Taliban and Osama bin Laden, both to help them, the Pakistanis, achieve their objectives. So you've asked me what I know about now. I'm trying to give you a kind of a background of all the characters now, all the players in this very moment who are meeting one with each other in some form or another, and how it as a plays together. This is what I would call an unholy alliance that was constituted in 1996. The Pakistanis recognize that the whole situation is becoming a real mess for them, because Pakistan is on the verge in some ways of becoming a failed state because of the unrest in the country, the ineffectiveness of the democratic governments that preceded this latest version of the military government. And they know that a lot of the young people who were trained for fighting in Afghanistan and Kashmir, when coming back, are not pleased with what they consider to be the lack of extreme Islamic nature of their government either. So they've got their own kind of chickens coming home to roost, and they probably see this as an opportunity to reestablish control in a secular fashion over their nation.
What about the relationship between U.S. intelligence, which helped to train Osama bin Laden and other Islamic militants in Afghanistan in fighting the Soviets, along with the British intelligence and Pakistani intelligence, and their relationship with these intelligence organizations today?
Well, I think we need to understand that was going on, but I think that the primary contacts between Osama bin Laden and anything that was going on relating to this war was through the Pakistani intelligence. That's not to say that it didn't have at least some connection with our own interest and objectives and strategies there. The thing to remember is that was a different era. In 1989, the Soviet Union left Afghanistan in ignominious defeat. At Thanksgiving time that same year, 1989, the Berlin Wall fell, and by the end of 1991, the Soviet Union was history. That was a different era, a different time, and you got to remember that those were the Afghans who remained behind to fight against the Soviet Union. And a lot of the others left and went to be refugees, but these people fought. And unfortunately, as I indicated earlier, those who did the fighting were unable themselves to put together a cohesive government, because this was a tribal society that had worked centuries to create a social fabric, a social infrastructure. The war, the Soviet war, devastated and ruined the country. It looks like Berlin after the Second World War, even to this day. And so it became Humpty Dumpty. All those pieces fell apart, and it takes not just one, two, or three generations to put them back together, but it took Afghanistan, you know, two centuries to put that together. And so into that vacuum, you know, were coming extremist, you know, forms of government, because unfortunately, this is a part of U.S. policy, which is an unfortunate element to this. We backed away from Afghanistan, and we're trying to help the Russians emerge from their Soviet past. That's where we put our primary focus. Not really recognizing, that stability in Afghanistan, Central Asia, and Pakistan was going to have even more of an impact on what might happen in Russia and that part of the world in the long term than just our policy there. I think we did the right thing with Russia, but we did the wrong thing with Afghanistan, and we need to be able to carry on more than one policy effectively at the same time.
Professor Thomas Gutierrez, can you give us a picture of Afghanistan, for example, Kabul, and the places that people are fleeing from right now? What is it exactly, if the U.S. bombed, they would be bombing?
Well, people say that they're, you know, that it's possible to bomb Afghanistan back into the Stone Age. I can tell you it's already there. I lived in Kabul for 10 years myself in the 60s and 70s, and it used to be a very beautiful city and a very, very picturesque country with dramatic, vistas and everything, high mountains and beautiful little valleys. But today, Afghanistan's a ruined, skeleton of its former self. And but the thing to remember is that there are many, 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 many Afghans inside the country who would just as soon be rid of these extremist Taliban and also these foreigners on their soil. Afghans have never welcomed foreigners on their soil. So now we have, these foreigners there. They'd like to get rid of them. And there are a lot of Afghans who I'm certain will be willing to work with us to try and remove Osama bin Laden and the Taliban if they are not willing to cooperate.
Finally, what do you think at this point in terms of the Pakistani political landscape, the U.S. military operations being, I don't know if it's based in Pakistan, using the airspace, etc., in terms of how it will affect the country?
Well, I think it's going to be difficult for the Pakistanis. They've created themselves, they've helped to create a situation that is difficult for them now to live with if they're to have a tenable future as a nation state. And so we're cooperating with them. I think we need to go in this, though, with our eyes wide open, because in the past 10 years, the Pakistanis have repeatedly lied to us about their intentions in Afghanistan and their connections with Osama bin Laden and the Taliban. They have been intimate throughout this time, very intimate, and they've denied this, but it's not true. And I witnessed this firsthand as a member of the United Nations Special Mission to Afghanistan and subsequent trips. And it's an unfortunate thing. You have one part of the Pakistani government telling you something, and then you have the military, and particularly the military intelligence, doing something else in league with extremists in their own country and Osama bin Laden and other extremists from the Persian Gulf.
What does it mean that Afghanistan has deployed 25,000 troops, according to the Washington Post, on the Pakistan-Afghani border?
Well, I'm not sure that all those troops are Afghan. I think large numbers of them are probably Arab and certainly Pakistani. One must understand, while these troops may be highly disciplined religiously, their military discipline is of another nature. And many of them, when I would meet in Afghanistan and various parts when I was there, during the UN period, didn't like to be in the military more than 6 months, and they just came home on their own. And I think it's possible for some of those to be peeled off if it appears that the situation is not very good for the Taliban at this time.
Soviet, Russian intelligence is saying that they were keeping tabs on Osama bin Laden until, well, just before the strike, and then don't have information on him. What do you think are the possibilities of, or the extensiveness of the U.S., Russian intelligence on Osama bin Laden and his whereabouts?
The intelligence apparatus that has the best knowledge of Osama bin Laden and his whereabouts right now is the Pakistani military intelligence, and they likely know where he is.
Do you think that Afghanistan will turn Osama bin Laden over with this Pakistani delegation going to ask that they do?
I think Afghans in Afghanistan would love to do that. I think the Taliban at this stage don't appear likely to want to do that. I have difficulty associating Afghanistan and Taliban together because the Taliban really are I consider them to be an entity that really has no concept of a nation state and is not really able to think in terms of the interests of the population of Afghanistan. The leader of the Taliban, Mullah Omar, you know, takes instructions only from God, and the Pakistanis and the Arabs who are surrounding him as advisors. And so I don't have a lot of faith that we'll be able to get much in the way from him. He's like those who crashed into the trade towers, probably believing that if he dies in the struggle, he'll serve as a martyr and go straight to heaven. But there are many Afghans who'd like to be able to reconstruct the country that they love so much, that has been fighting against the Soviets and now this mess for the last 10 years, who'd like to be to bring their country back to what at least it was before the war began. And that will take a long, long time.
What is the relationship between the Taliban and Osama bin Laden? Why do they protect him?
Because they're very dependent upon him. Most of the Taliban's fighters on the front line against the other Afghans in the country are members of Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden's group, and also those who have been trained in his camps, in his training camps. So, that's the relationship. In many ways, Osama bin Laden's military forces are stronger than those of the Afghan Taliban movement. I regret to have to tell you, I need to go right now.
Well, I thank you very much for spending the time with us. Tomas Gutierrez is Dean of International Studies and Programs at the University of Nebraska at Omaha and the University of Nebraska Medical Center. He's Director of the Center for Afghanistan Studies at UNO. Tomas Gutierrez spent 10 years in Afghanistan. He was with the Peace Corps. You are listening to Democracy Now in Exile. In this program, you'll be hearing a peace vigil of thousands that took place yesterday, looking from Brooklyn at the World Trade Center, and or I should say the World Trade Center-less skyline of Lower Manhattan. It was a vigil to show support for Arab Americans and Muslims. We will also be speaking with Robert Fisk in Lebanon. He's interviewed Osama bin Laden as well. He's interviewed one of the parents of a man who has been blamed for the terror attacks in the United States. You are listening to Democracy Now! In Exile. Back in a minute. So listening to Ground Zero Radio, the War and Peace Report. This is Democracy Now in Exile. We're broadcasting just blocks from what used to be the towers of the World Trade Center. This weekend, not much luck with finding anyone alive in the rubble. It looks like somewhere around, well, more than 5,000 people continue to be, if you can use the term, entombed or incinerated by the attacks of last Tuesday, both in New York, the World Trade Center Towers attack, and the attack in Washington, D.C. on the Pentagon. We are at a firehouse, downtown community television, just below Canal Street. We spent last week since the attacks here because we're afraid we would not be able to come in to broadcast if we ever left the site. We are in the evacuation zone. It's loosened up a bit over the weekend. A lot of the emergency vehicles are just a block away from us on Broadway and in that area as hundreds of emergency workers continue to get rid of in a very